Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Stay live off the record with Zhivago Line is sponsored by BTC, CG Atlantic, Fidelity Bank of Bahamas, Global Learning Exchange, the International Culture, Wine and Food Festival, RF Bank and Trust, and Raw Star Assurance.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Zhivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, day after Heroes Day. And I trust and hope that you enjoyed your time off this somewhat long weekend. If you want to give us a call today, the numbers to do so are as follow. You can call us on 323-6232. That's 323-6232. Or 325-4316. 325-4316. Or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can also text me on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. Some interesting things to talk about today. Some of them kind of curious, actually, to talk about today. One of them is, and my brother Juan McCartney discussed this also, but it was a very curious thing for me. I spent about 20 years active in frontline politics of our country. For 10 of those years, I was a member of parliament, cabinet minister, for a little under a year, a senator. But I followed politics long before that. In fact, one of the things I like to tell people is that myself and Darren Cash and Michael Pintard and Donnell Osborne and others, like, we were fairly au fait on what was happening in the country, liked to follow the issues and would spend some time, you know, examining the politics of our country. And so I have had opportunity inside and outside of parliament to examine, to observe things happening in the political realm. And it may well be the case that someone knows better than me about this. I'm serious, I don't know. That very well be the case. But Shane Gibson's, the former member of parliament for Golden Gates and cabinet minister, Shane Gibson's announcement about his interest in Michael, in the circumstances around it, I have never seen in my life. Never in my life have I seen any such thing. Have I observed any such thing in politics? I mean, again, it could well be the case that it happened. Maybe someone knows of something, but I have never heard of a situation in which 1 year out, just a little over a year out of an election, a sitting member of parliament, brand new to the process. Brand new. This is not a veteran. This is not a seasoned person. This is a person brand new to politics in a regime that is doing reasonably well. I mean, like, the regime isn't under pressure of collapse. The regime isn't embroiled in a lot of conflict or scandals. The regime is fairly much doing okay. The regime isn't under a great deal of pressure from the opposition. Neither is the member of parliament himself under that pressure, because those things could make somebody rethink their participation. But 1 year out, with none of that happening, a sitting member of parliament being the member of parliament for Michal, Basil McIntosh, we're told, okay, is indicating at this point. Mind you, it is possible to a year in to say, you know what, I'm not going to do this next time, or I'm not sure I want to do this next time. That's possible. You're a human being. You're experiencing the thing that you only saw from the outside, and you come in and maybe you get a feel and think, you know what, this isn't for me. But as a sitting member of parliament, first time in, 1 year out of an election, to actually verbalize and to have somebody else verbalize for you, you're not sure you're going to run again. In other words, what you've done is you have said essentially I could be a lame duck member of parliament for 4 years. You know, listen to me. Let me tell you what that means. That means you're saying, listen, basically, bro, this is what you're telling constituents now. These are the people who went out and campaigned for you. These are people who went and voted for you. This is the party that went and supported your election to the House of Assembly, one of the most important things you could ever do on planet Earth for your country, is to represent people of the country, right? And you're saying to them, listen to me, I am not sure I won't be your representative next time. I want you to get that message in your head. Think about that for a moment. I'm going to collect this salary for the member of parliament seat for the next 4 years. I'm going to collect that. And, you know, I'm going to show up. But I'm not sure I'm going to be your person. Because trust me when I tell you, there's a big difference between someone who is sure they're going to run again in the way they serve and someone who is not sure or who will not run again. It's just human. It's not even that you intend to be less passionate. You intend to be less devoted. You just are not going to be mentally the same person if you know there is a stake in it for you at the end of the thing. And you say that to somebody 4 years out of the next election? Now, on top of that, you get a member of parliament, former, who says, I didn't talk to you. I talked to you and I'm telling you, I mean, people are telling me they want you. In other words, 1 year out, people are telling me, this former member of parliament, our current member of parliament, a guy on your team, a guy in your party, he sucks. And I therefore want to look at someone else, and the someone else we're looking at is you. And you tell the person, listen, this is some bravado. Listen, you tell the person, listen, bro, people are calling me and telling me, you know, that they're not happy and, you know, they're interested in me looking at the seat. Now, I'm going to come and park myself in your seat that you are not sure of. This was in a, I'm sure I'm not running. I'm going to park in your seat you're not sure of. Listen to me, folks. First of all, Shane Gibson is a very influential person. Shane Gibson is a charismatic person. If you are an uncharismatic member of parliament, you are already waffling on whether you're going to run again. You already seem to have difficulty with constituents. Now, all we hear is constituents are calling. Listen, a lot of times when you hear people say, lots of people are calling, come on, bro, come on. This man won by about 300 or so votes in that constituency. There are a little over 1,000 votes in that constituency, right? Like, how many people call the Sheehan Gibson? 10, 20, 30, 40? Anybody believes it's 300, 400, 500 people? So you're gonna park there, and what's gonna happen? You are going to be de facto a representative distraction for constituents against your sitting member of parliament. Listen to me. I'm telling you. Listen. I have never in my life in politics heard of anything that strange. So has anybody done anything wrong? No, not wrong. Not wrong. Impolitic? Yeah. It's really impolitic. And it's not just impolitic for the sitting member of parliament, Mr. McIntosh, who's an engineer. An engineer. A problem solver. Right? It's not just impolitic for him. And it isn't only impolitic for Mr. Gibson. I think it's impolitic, right? I mean, honestly, I can't imagine a Sheehan Gibson having someone come to him sitting in a seat saying to him, listen, bro, people calling me and I'm going to express an interest in this seat because you're not sure if you're going to run again. Can you imagine a Sheehan Gibson on the other side of that kind of dialogue? Not a possible chance. Not to me. I can't imagine it. Maybe it could happen, but I can't imagine it, right? And so you're going to have that person, whether he intends to or not, he is going to take away from your representation. But in addition to that, the party, you notice the Progressive Liberal Party has not spoken to this as yet, as far as I'm aware, unless somebody could show me something, right? But I cannot imagine that the party thinks this is politic. Political parties, as savvy as I know them to be, I cannot imagine that they regard this as best for them. So if you look at this to its end conclusion, several things could happen. Let me tell you one of the worst things that could happen. So McCall is, generally speaking, outside of the minister era, a closely contested seat. Closely. I mean, I'm talking about winning by 10, 14, 30 votes, right? So if the Progressive Liberal Party does not think that this is the way to go, does not want to run Sheehan Gibson as an example. Sheehan Gibson says, people are calling me, so I'm going to run. So maybe he runs as independent. Minnis is not the leader of the Free National Movement. What do you think is going to happen with McCall? Chances are you're going to split PLP, vote PLP can run somebody else other than Gibson. You're going to split that vote and the F&M vote ain't going to get split. I think that Mr. Gibson has his own entrenchment and popularity, but it's not going to extend to F&Ms. Not in a non-Minnis era. No, it's not. Right? He might pull off a couple, but it's not going to be that kind of party. So unless the PLP surrenders and says, okay, well, McIntosh isn't running again, and I do not see how after this dialogue, if that is true and the party confirms that, I don't see how McIntosh gets to run again, period. So whatever happens, I think McIntosh has set in stone his fate for the next election. So him saying he isn't sure, bro, honestly, with that kind of commentary, I think he set his fate for next time. So they'll run somebody else if they're not going to run Mr. Gibson. That's a gamble. Why a party? Listen, this is early. Why a party would decide? Well, why personalities in a party would decide on something like that? I mean, even if Mr. McIntosh was not going to run, this is an easy negotiation to have between him and Mr. Gibson, quiet negotiation to say, listen, you know, I ain't sure I ain't gonna run. So how about you, you know, let's you hang around, you know, work with me in the constituency. You will have visibility and therefore, you know, over time, people will get to see you. And, you know, when the time comes, if not anything, boom, we're good. And the party knows this, you know, blah, 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 blah. Be good. This kind of route tells me something else is going on in the background. Okay? Something else is going on in the background. Stay tuned. Stay tuned. I think you'll hear something else. If Prime Minister Davis had said this in advance, if the chairman of the Progressive Labour Party, Mr. Mitchell, had said this in advance, then I would say, well, you know, they're working something out, no problems. For this to have happened the way it happened, it's very curious to me. It's an interesting political development for sure. We'll have to see how it plays out, but really interesting. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Discover the Global Learning Exchange, an innovative network that's making world-class higher education flexible, affordable, and accessible to Bahamians. Ready to earn an internationally accredited degree? GLX is now enrolling students. Pursue a bachelor's or master's degree, or become Microsoft or IBM certified. Call GLX at 603-0713, go to globallearningexchange.com/Bahamas, or visit GLX on Mackey Street today.
So, what would you like to discuss?
Insurance, Doc. It's so frustrating. I go to the mall for motor, drive to Bay Street to get a home quote, swing east to file a medical claim, then go west for a pensions appointment. Don't even get me started about life.
I'm going to prescribe CG Atlantic. They have all the insurance you're looking for.
Really? Thanks.
With all the insurance you need, we're like a doctor that doesn't waste your time and money. CG Atlantic. Good like that.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. We're talking a bit about the Shane Gibson, Basil McIntosh development in Beat My Car. It'll be an interesting one to watch for sure. Someone says, great show as usual, Mr. Lang. We are not a forgiving people. If the court say Mr. Gibson innocent, why should he not run again Now him asking for Macintosh to set is another story. Now that's cold as ice. Macintosh have to be the conk. First of all, if Shane Gibson runs and wants to run again, I have no issue with that. That has nothing to do with me. We have not made any commentary about that at all, because you're right. He has a right to run. Nothing disqualifies him from running. He's not been convicted of anything. Any won his case, he's been acquitted. Even if he had been convicted, served time, and came out and wanted to run and voters voted for him, that's all I need to know in my whole lifetime, because in a democracy, people have a right to choose their representatives, period. And as long as you qualify to run, please carry on. Don't mind what people say. People will talk about you if you're Jesus Christ, right? They may have issues with you if you're Jesus Christ. So it doesn't matter. What we're talking about, yes, is the circumstances around this. This text says, I feel bad for Macintosh because Mr. Gibson carry a lot of weight. He is a big, big man in politics. He could actually remove Macintosh. No, he can't. He cannot. Don't let's get out of hand now. He can't move him, right? He can't. The only voters could move you outside of some disqualifying factor that moves you, that the courts would then move you to, right? But no, Mr. Gibson can't move him. Only a by-election could move him, or a resignation, right? Can't move him. So don't let anybody hear you say that. That's not possible. Says, if I run for the FNM and win next election and you come 1 year after I win and say you want my seat, me and you going to be falling out? Okay, I can see that. boy. Anyway, we'll watch it and see how it goes. Interesting. Very interesting turn of events. You know, here, I don't think we've heard the end of it, the last of it yet. So once again, we are dealing with crisis. So last time, the FNM spoke to an immigration crisis, and the minister responsible for immigration said, what crisis? There is no crisis. Okay, I addressed that myself. I said, well, how do you define crisis? Got all kind of texts about me being a foreigner, loving foreigners. Well, this time around, I don't know what I'm going to be accused of today. So the commissioner of police says there is no crime crisis. This is following suggestions by the FNM that it seems inappropriate for the Bahamas to be sending resources, police officers, to the Turks and Caicos Islands to address their crime problem, when in fact, we have a crime problem that we have not ameliorated. They indicate that, well, the Turks and Caicos Islands are a dependent territory of the United Kingdom. It should be their problem. Why are we sending resources over there? That's what they sort of, so because we have a crisis here. And the commissioner of police, the chief technical law enforcement officer of our country, is saying there is no crime crisis. So no matter how many murders you guys are screaming about, no matter how you feel about the murders, and the rate of the murders, and how you calculate that if we stay at this pace, we will exceed what we did last year, the commissioner says there is no crime crisis. Once again, what's a crisis in crime? When do you have a crisis in crime? Is it only a crisis because you say so, because the opposition says so, because the government says so, because some of the people in the country say so? Is one murder a crisis? Is 2, 10, 15, 100, 300, 600? When are you at crisis? Do we even know what a crisis is anymore? Or is the crisis only, like one person texted me the last time on immigration, well, if you have people drawn on your resources, it's a crisis. Okie dokie. Well, when has that not been the case? That people haven't been drawn on your resources? Ever? Never, as far as I'm aware. So have we ever been in a country without crime? Ever? Has crime ever been going down decade to decade in the Bahamas? No. Every decade in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, there was a higher crime rate at the beginning, at the end of the decade than at the beginning. So if you look at decade to decade, the murder rate in the Bahamas going straight up, you'll see a trend straight up every decade. So when did we get into a crisis? When did it become a crisis? Was it a crisis in the 60s? Was it a crisis in the 70s? Mind you, the murder rate was going up in those decades. Was it a crisis in the 80s, in the 90s, in the 2000s? When did it become a crisis? Because the police commissioner, the one responsible for crime, is saying there's not. Now, listen to me, folks. Listen to me. If the police commissioner is saying that there's no crime crisis, knowing there is a crime crisis, then he is untruthful and therefore cannot be trusted. Oh, my word. Listen to me. If he is saying to you, the public of the Bahamas, see, when you are a public officer, you have to be careful speaking to the public of the Bahamas. If you say something to the public that you know to be untrue, you are lying to the public and therefore are no longer trustworthy. Your everything you communicate to the public thereafter can be called into suspicion. And that is dangerous for a commissioner of police to have to deal with, because he is the one who has to sometimes say to people, no, stay indoors. No, go that way. No. And you don't believe him because he lied to you before? That's the first thing. If the commissioner of police is saying there is no crime crisis and he doesn't know there is a crime crisis, he's incompetent. Let me say it again. If you have a commissioner, the chief technical expert law enforcement officer of your country says there is no crime crisis when in fact there is a crime crisis, then he's incompetent, meaning he doesn't even know the thing he's having to deal with. He's incompetent. And being an incompetent police commissioner ain't helpful either, because how can you trust and have confidence in an incompetent police commissioner? If the commissioner is saying there's no crime crisis and he is like delusional about that, then he's kind of insane. That can't be helpful either. So you have to make up your mind what you believe to be true about what the commissioner says. Because the only out is he's speaking the truth about what he observes about the thing over which he has responsibility. He didn't say there's not a problem. He didn't say that. He said there's no crisis. Which is it? When do you get the crisis? Are we in a crime crisis? Is it pretty bad in respect to murder out there? I'd say so. I definitely say so. Is it a crisis? But you tell me. I don't want folks to call me and text me and tell me, man, like, you delusional and you. I'm asking the question. So this text says, Mr. Lang, I don't have an issue when politicians get acquitted by the court and want to run again. I have an issue when a politician want to lay up. Okay. You are getting me caught up in your business today, my friend. You got to work that out yourself. All right. So this text says, I would like these authority figures, when they are addressing the problem, to have statistics to back up their assertions. Aha. As to whether there is a crisis or not. Should we not have statistics? I am a concerned citizen who is tired of the general comments when addressing issues with no noted statistics. Is that too much to ask? It is not too much to ask. In fact, you are spot on. You are spot on. The question is, what's the crisis? Where, and you say you want statistics, very good call. Well, what statistics would reflect that we are in a crisis? Well, I could tell you one thing, one statistics that could do it, one. So if you look at the murder rate for 100,000, right? All right, if you look at the murder rate for 100,000 by country, right? what they do is they say, okay, you have about 400,000 people in your country. You have a murder rate of 100, let's say. So for every 100,000, you have about 25 murders. Okay, you have about 25 murders. So the question is 25 murders per 100,000 a crisis point for the country? That's the question. So let me tell you who is around 25 per 100,000 right now. Montserrat is. No, Colombia is. Guatemala is. Anguilla is. Bahamas is. Brazil is. Okay, and then you have a ton of countries that are higher than that. So for instance, Trinidad and Tobago is around 30-something, South Africa around 30-something, St. Kitts and Nevis around 30-something, close to 40, St. Vincent and the Grenadines close to 40, Belize close to 40, Lesotho is over 40, Jamaica is almost 50, U.S. Virgin Islands, you know what I'm saying? These are not, U.S. Virgin Islands is not a poor place, right? Is near 50, Venezuela is over 50, Honduras is about mid-50s, El Salvador is 80, right? So you look at countries like Japan, Indonesia, China, Italy, Germany, United Kingdom, France, Vietnam, Iran, Bangladesh, Egypt, India, Thailand, Turkey, Pakistan, Congo and Nigeria and Russia, Philippines, according to this statistic, they are all under 25. All under 25 per 100,000. So we would have to stick a pin somewhere and say, okay, if we are at over 25, over 30, over 50, over 10, over, then we are in crisis. So what do you think? When should we get there? You can't tell me anytime you have a murder, man, because in a population of people, man, you're gonna have a murder. You're gonna have it. Maybe not, you know, like maybe there's some places where that don't happen. Like Japan is rare according to these numbers, but you have it still, right? So we're gonna take a break, ladies and gentlemen, listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody,
isn't it time you conquered your investment goals? With RF Mutual Funds, you can access a range of investments within a single fund. That means you get access to top-performing local stocks, along with exposure to international markets. Add expert management and competitive returns by 25.16% with our targeted equity fund, and you won't just meet your investment goals, you'll conquer them. Get started with RF Mutual Funds today at rfgroup.com.
Buying a home is one of the most important investment decisions you'll ever make, so it's best to insure your home for the full replacement value. If your home is underinsured, the condition of average could apply and reduce the amount you'll receive if you make a claim. Ask your insurance agent about underinsurance and condition of average before you purchase or renew your home insurance policy. For more information, visit www.icb.gov.bs. This message was brought to you by the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas.
The International Culture Wine and Food Fest is back, this time at a new location. We've relocated from Botanical Gardens to Collins House Gardens. And I know some of y'all are asking, where that is? That's on Shirley Street and Collins Avenue, right across from Doctor's Hospital. And I know you also want to ask, y'all love parking? Yes, businesses in the area have opened their secured parking lots, and Bahamas Experience shuttle buses will be available. Enjoy food from around the world, Australia, Colombia, and even Morocco, just to name a few. Yup, the drinks could be there too. Bring the kids to enjoy the Gombe Kids Zone and our spooky haunted house. Enjoy the Bohemian concert along with the Rhythm Band, and the singing Bishop Lawrence Roll will be in the gospel concert on Sunday. So save the dates, Saturday, October 22nd from 10 to 10 p.m. and Sunday, October 23rd from 10 to 7 p.m. Come on out and have a great cultural time. The 25th International Culture Wine and Food Fest. Did I mention free Wi-Fi by your life? Yup, that too.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Then you know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. So we're talking about the fact that the commissioner of police, this is not a politician. This is not, you know, the minister, the MP. This is the commissioner of police saying there's no crime crisis in the Bahamas. He's the chief crime fighting man in the country. He says there's no crisis. What are you all talking about? Opposition, public, or members of the public who are saying that there's no crisis. He didn't say there's no problem. Okay, so don't accuse him of being in denial of the fact that there's a problem. He didn't say that. He said there's no crisis. There is a difference. Let me see. Let's look at some definitions of crisis to see if it helps us. Okay, let's see. I'll take them right from the sources I get them from. So the Internet Dictionary, this is Bing's Dictionary, says a time of intense difficulty or danger. So, and then they say it's a time when a difficult or important decision must be made, or it's the turning point of a disease when an important change takes place, indicating either recovery or death. So let's say we took that particular definition. Are we saying that we are at a point where if it gets any worse, we'll never go back? It may be fatal, or what? That's that definition. Merriam-Webster Dictionary says it's the turning point for better or worse in an acute disease or fever, or be it a paroxysmal attack of pain, distress, or disordered function. It's an emotionally significant event or radical change of status in a person's life. It's a decisive moment. Or it's an unstable or crucial time or a state of affairs in which a decisive change is impending. It's a situation that has reached a critical phase, which is not itself very helpful, that one. So that's Merriam-Webster Dictionary, crisis. Cambridge Dictionary says a crisis is a time of great disagreement, confusion, or suffering. We might be in a crisis. We are in a time of great disagreement. Some might say confusion or suffering. All right. An extremely difficult or dangerous point in a situation. Are we, in respect to crime, an extremely difficult or dangerous point? Some people could argue that, I think. Yeah. Experiencing a time of great difficulty, danger, or suffering. Okay. So those are some definitions. Those definitions, I would say, could qualify the current situation depending on your perspective as a crisis. It could, you know, depends on how rigid you are prepared to be. This text says the issue is that when government and heads of agencies speak in this country, they do not define the metrics for the population to determine what is a crisis. You simply cannot say that crime is in a crisis without defining what metrics constitute a crisis. Absolutely, you're spot on. You and I agree. Is it 200 murders a year? Is it 300? Did the media even ask? You are spot on. Spot on. I cannot argue with you. Spot on. What's the criteria? What's the qualifying criteria for that? This text says, Mr. Lang, I think the big problem is we keep calling Nassau the entire Bahamas. Nassau has a crime problem, but not the 700 plus islands. We need to let the international world know Nassau is not the entire Bahamas. You are right. You are absolutely right. Just like Florida is not Illinois, and Chicago in particular is not New York State and so forth. Neither is Inagua, New Providence, et cetera. However, we ain't gonna get away with it. Right? You could say that, and you'd be right. But people, let's hear the Bahamas. Bahamas got a crime problem because you're a small country. That's the way they see it. I remember some folks landed in Freeport, and they were on the wrong plane, wrong flight, landed on the wrong island. They were going to New Providence. So they asked me if I could give them some road directions to New Providence. I didn't laugh at the time, right? I just told them, no, you have to fly there or you have to take a boat there. But it was really, that was their perspective. The commissioner don't think we in a crisis because he has the entire police force on his side, so he feels safe and secure. That could be a point. Or he could be believing we're not in a crisis because he defines crisis differently than the opposition does, than you do. And so maybe he is judging based on his sense of control of the situation, his sense that, you know what, my resources are not so out of control. My resources are not so strained or stretched that I cannot battle what is before us. Maybe that's, I do know this much though. Why did the UK bother to come to the Bahamas to get police officers? Firstly, it is a compliment to our officers did so, because it does suggest that they believe that they have something valuable to offer. So that's quite an endorsement of their capability insofar as that's concerned. But why? But this is the UK. This is a place with many, many billions and billions of pounds of monies and resources and trained and talented people. They deal with terrorist incidences all the time. Why would they not send their officers there? Well, maybe they calculated, you know, people respond better to people that, you know, are there, seem cultural and ethnic upbringing, yeah, but you know, own the place though. Still, your governor is an Englishman. You took over the government after some issues in the country, so they didn't used to you all running the place. Why would you send for Bahamian police officers? Is your belief that these are the most capable people on planet Earth? You couldn't arrange an agreement with, say, Americans, even with some private securities that you could provide that temporary constabulary to? You couldn't do that? Why? Or was this the least expensive means to do so? Because to carry UK officers, you know, that's pounds in travel, pounds in housing, pounds. Americans, same thing. Maybe the Bahamas is more affordable option. Capable, but still more affordable. Is that it? I don't know. But curious that they chose that route. Curious. So good afternoon, Lang. The commissioner is delusional. He said that the murder count won't reach over 100 by the end of the year. That's why he said it's not a crisis. It won't reach over 100? I thought he's already at 100. We're not at 100 yet? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this news break.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you've been down the same road.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We were talking about the fact that the commissioner of police has indicated that there's no crime crisis in the country. And this coming on the heels of the opposition suggesting there's one, and that they can't understand why we would send critical resources to Turks and Caicos Island to deal with their problem. You know, the decision to send our officers to Turks and Caicos to help fight an issue, the extraordinary issue they seem to be having there, is not without risk. Because I want you to imagine this. Imagine that our officers go down there and then they have great success in transforming the situation there and making it much better. And then imagine that here in the meantime, crime continues to go up. The commissioner, the Minister of National Security, will therefore now confront a situation in which your officers go to a foreign territory and seems to have made a difference in the rate of crime there But in the meantime, your crime is going up. So what are you to believe? They are only effective in reducing murder in a foreign territory, but can't do it here? Or if they were here, maybe it would have gone down here and lives would have been saved? Or if they come back and your crime keeps going up, you got to wonder, okay, well, why can't you get it done here if you could get it done? It is not without its risk. Of course, if it goes down there and it goes down here, commission is justified and valid and vindicated. So as the minister to say, listen, we did both. Wow, that's great, right? So it's not without risk to the force's reputation to have done what they have done. Interestingly enough, Prime Minister Brave Davis said something that I thought was curious, right? Prime Minister Davis said that had it not been for steps taken by the commissioner and the police force, the crime rate would have been worse than it is. Now, actually, like, that could be true, but no one ever gets away with saying, well, let me give you an example. If we hadn't taken the steps we took, the unemployment rate would have been worse than the 15, 16% it is. People don't let you get away with that because they're like, okay, well, prove that. Like, how do you prove what you prevented in the way of crime? I mean, like, really, what can you imagine those statistics? Those would be fantastic statistics to confirm the effectiveness of anything, what didn't happen, right? Because the police force could say, listen, bro, y'all are here beating up on my force for 100 murders. But guess what? There are almost 400,000 people in this country and millions more that come on an annual basis, and none of them were murdered. So you don't think I'm being effective? I prevented the murder of all those people. You could have made that argument when there was a big hullabaloo about crime. I mean, murder was up to 150 like that under Ingram when billboards were posted. And he could have said, yeah, but, you know, I don't like this, but look at the thousands and thousands and thousands of people who weren't murdered. And so you could say that, but unless you could point to very specific examples of how you prevented a murder or prevented a crime, you just can't get away with that kind of statement, really, oftentimes. You just can't. It doesn't fly most times. Somebody's telling me there's 107 murders now. So if the commissioner said that we won't reach over 100 murders by the end of the year, we're at 107 now. Okay? So it would be interesting to see what happens between now and the time our officers return from Turks and Caicos, and it would be interesting to see what happens in Turks and Caicos. The Minister of National Security says he can't be specific about what they're going there to do. And I take that to mean that there is a peculiar, specific set of circumstances prevailing there that they are looking to our officers to address. And so he's not communicating that to the public. I could see that. If it's a tactic based on a specific set of circumstances, you wouldn't want to publicize the tactic so that those who may be perpetrating the crime might be aware of it, because they listen to the radio and news and Hotmail and internet too. So I could understand and see that. I could understand that. But they ain't here fighting crime. So it's a double edge. And so that's one of those public policy issues that in some ways you're damned if you do, and if you're damned if you don't. If you're a territory reaches out to you for help, Why wouldn't you? Because we have like all by up back arrangements with Turks and Caicos, the U.S. and them. So we try to cooperate on crime matters. If the crime situation gets significant enough for them, it could lead to people coming here. You also have Bahamian citizens in Turks and Caicos, you know. So, you know, like the Americans tend to take an interest in, you know, what's happening in a territory where many of their citizens are. You know, it's not a simple matter just to say no, but it is a necessary matter to explain your policy determination to the country, and in particular, as the opposition, or the Majesty's loyal opposition, to the opposition. Now, you could give them an explanation. If they're not satisfied with that, then that's up to them, but, you know, they deserve one. They deserve one. The country deserves one. That's part of public policy. This text says, Mr. Lang, a survey of Bahamians found that they do indeed feel that we are in a crisis. What would carry more weight? The Commission of Police assertion or that of the people who I might say do not have the privilege of being armed or protected by bodyguards, and it is just based on murders. What about assault and robbery? You know, this is interesting and a very good point to raise, but let me explain something to you. So in the United Kingdom and elsewhere in the world, some countries in the world, not everywhere, they have two things. They have something called a crime report, and they have something called a crime survey report. And it is not unusual for the crime survey, which is a surveying of the public to see what their sentiments are about crime, to be very different than the reality of crime. So you could have a relatively low murder rate, but the public, for whatever number of reasons, maybe some propaganda, maybe some something, feels, as you said, unsafe. And that is reflected in a survey. I'll give you another example that's used of this in research. So if you look at the statistics, very few people get attacked walking along a wooded forest. Very few people. I mean, just look at it. Very few people have been attacked by a person, raped, robbed, and murdered walking past a wooded forest. More people have been raped, robbed, or murdered in a city center than next to a wooded area. Yet, more people are afraid walking through near a wooded area than walking in a city center. More people are. You and I both know this, especially at night, especially in the dark, right? Another point, less people die by plane crash than die by car crashes. But most people are more afraid of crashing in an airplane than crashing in a car. So it is true that people can believe there's a crisis, but the belief, while it should matter to the politician because you don't want your society to feel unsafe, it doesn't have to reflect the reality of things. And so it's a problem both ways. If the crime survey, people are saying it's a crisis, the government needs to pay attention to that. If there isn't really a crisis, the government needs to pay attention to that too. So, you know. This text says, Mr. Lang, if you ask me, we could use some Scotland Yard agents or FBI agents to help us out over here. We can't say if something didn't happen, then this would have happened. You can't prove a counterfactual. Mr. Davis is talking nonsense. You can't prove a counterfactual. That is true. I mean, that's the reality. It's a very difficult argument to make. That's like Minnis saying, if we didn't have a lockdown, we would have all died from COVID. Nonsense. Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good example. It's true. Yeah, it is very true, right? This text says, one group that can get kudos. EMF staff, A&E doctors, nurses, and others, or our staff, ICU and wards, they play a critical role. Absolutely, absolutely. Like so. This is actually a very good point that the people in an ICU, in the emergency management services, they can say, hey, had it not been for our effort, the murder rate would have been X, Y, and Z. They know that. They know because they know the guy came in there with a gunshot wound. He's alive. She came in there with a gunshot wound. She's alive. They can say that. This one was assaulted, attacked, knifed, came in. We repaired them. They didn't die. So you have those statistics that can be used. But they don't have anything to do with the police, though, right? Because they have more to do with the emergency management services people than the police. And in fact, if you go and ask, if you could look and check the statistics for gunshots, knifings, and assaults that reflected willful intent to harm, maybe even to kill, and you see, if you lower those success rate, right now you'd be talking about a murder rate that's way out of control, right? And so, and that's a good point. So, Mr. Lang, why would someone walk past or through a wooded area at night? That person just asking for it? First of all, let me give you an example. Because see, people are, let me give you an example. When I was a younger man, younger person, I lived in Freeport, Grand Bahama, in Caravelle Beach. And the carnival, right? The carnival would be in the International Bazaar or some Junkanoo or summer Junkanoo festival in the International Bazaar, or the movie theater was downtown. So we went to these functions in the evenings, 9 o'clock, 9:30, we're getting out. We don't have any car. Nobody's picking us up. Me, sometimes I did it alone. Sometimes I did it alone. Me, sometimes neighbors. We're walking a straight road to Caravelle Beach. My mother could tell you this is true. There's no street lights. The whole thing is pine forest. And we're walking. You say, well, why would somebody do that? Do you realize that people actually go camping in the woods? In the whole woods? In the whole naked woods? So, yeah, people do that, right? So it's not, people aren't crazy. They understand the nature of the risk. And that's why I'm saying we walked it, because we understood, listen, ain't nobody inside them bush. I mean, there might be, but chances are it was, and we did it often, right? And the risk, if we had had reports of people being attacked from those woods, we would not have gone, because we would have had reports, but we knew better. All right, this text is, Mr. Lang, y'all just really make me mad. How come every time y'all having a conversation, Dr. Minnis' name has to come up? Y'all vocabulary low. Dr. Minnis is the recent sitting prime minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. That would have been like you talking of not mentioning Pinling's name after Ingram became prime minister. Even Ingram had Pinling's name in his mouth a lot. That'd be like Christie not having Ingram's name in his mouth after he became prime minister, right? Because they're the most recent. This is recent history, you know. I guarantee you, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years from now, unless Dr. Minnis is back in the saddle, chances are the rate of reference will be very low. So he's a recent leader of our country. And a reference point for certain activities, policies, and so forth. So he will have honorary mention just by virtue of the stature that he had and the position he held. So he can't get away from that. That's when you're a big man, big person. So it is going to be a matter of some interest how this crime thing all evolves. All right, and we'll see. The truth of the matter is, no matter how you talk about crime, it becomes anecdotal to some extent because many of us, as we talk about it, we are not seized of the facts, seized of the stats. And so we're opining on our feelings, we're opining on some observation we make, which is limited to our scope of observation. We're opining on something we've heard and so forth and so forth. So we're in the whole loop of opinionation, speculation, and so forth, right? And there's nothing wrong with that once we state it as that. When we state our opinions and not as facts, we're good. We're okay. That's, you're totally entitled to express your feelings, observations, views about a matter. It is for others then to take that and properly appropriate it in terms of really, is this verifiable? Is this valid? Is it logical? Is it rational? And decide to do it what they want, right? I studied economics. I comment on economics. I don't mean nobody need to take my advice. You know, you take that for what it is. If I give you a stat, you can look at it and verify and say, oh yeah, well that seems to be correct and so forth. And you could do with it what you want. But what I can't do is I can't take my opinion on how it should be and make that the fact of life, because it's not. I could be very strong in my opinion. I could be very passionate about it. Some people could even hate me because they think I'm just too strong about it. Mind you, they are strong about their own, but they don't look at their own strength. They just get mad with me and tell me I'm arrogant when I say mine strongly enough. And then when they stay there strong, and they don't get mad with themselves. So, but that's okay. It's their opinion and they're entitled to have it. All right. There's greetings, Mr. Lang. This is not about your topic today. Can I speak to you after your program is done? Okay. Oh, I'm not gonna be outside the Guardian today, so I can't. You could speak to me on by phone. So you're quite free to call me after the show. Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you listen to See Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. We're going to look on something else when we come back. We'll be back after this break.
Not afraid to take a stand, everybody.
Just got bumped up. Bundled fiber customers enjoy up to 3x the speed increase for free. That means if you have the Extreme 100 Plus Talk 24/7 bundle, or the Extreme 100 TV Max bundle, or even the Extreme 150 Plus Talk 24/7 Plus TV Max bundle, your internet speed just went to 300 megabits per second. Nothing to do. Just keep doing you.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand.
Whatever weather, cold or warm, just letting you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. So the Bahamas suffered another downgrade by Moody's. Moody's is essentially saying that, since our last evaluation of your creditworthiness as a sovereign borrower, you are not as creditworthy as you used to be. That's really what they're saying. They're saying that in terms of your unsecured debt, you're not as secure as you used to be. In terms of your long-term debt, you're not as secure as you used to be, and therefore we're downgrading you. Don't worry about the B, double A, or whatever, notches. You got downgraded notches. Why? So I've listened to some people. First of all, the government came out with a release refuting it, actually arguing with Moody's. And I chuckled because I recall when Standard & Poor's downgraded the Bahamas, and I was Minister of State for Finance. I was amused at how some people at the time, just like criticized me for having the audacity to refute Standard & Poor's. How dare you? How dare you criticize what Standard & Poor's said? How dare you? In December the 23rd, 2009, Bradley Roberts the late said, despite all the talk by Prime Minister Hubert Ingham and Junior Minister Shivago lying about the government being fiscally prudent, the truth is that this F&M government is simply reckless. And listen to what he said. Listen, I want you all to read it. The PLP asserts that in light of the serious financial mess the country is in now, the first course of action is for Prime Minister to fire himself as Minister of Finance, as he does not possess the discipline to restrain expenditure. And it is clear that his junior minister, Shivago Lang, does not have the posterity to stand up to his leader. So I chuckled when I read the press release refuting Moody's downgrade. I don't think anything is wrong with the government refuting Moody's downgrade. I think that if you disagree with them, tell them. Moody's, some people argue, how is it possible for you to get downgraded? Your economy is growing. Your deficit is going down. How did you move the economic outlook from negative to stable? This is what Moody's did. And still you downgrade the country. Right? How is that possible? But the truth is that our economic growth, positive as it is and wonderful for ourselves, is a recovery from a severe the severely affected economy of through the pandemic, right? So you are getting better off. So they move you from negative to stable because, yes, you're getting better. You're not at pre-pandemic levels yet, but you're getting better. So that's fine. And yes, your fiscal deficit is going down, but that's expected because in the height of the pandemic, you had no revenue coming in, and so not limited revenue coming in. So you expected that. So that's none of that was unexpected. However, what Moody's is saying is that the government is in a higher liquidity risk situation than it was in before. So I'm at, what Moody's is saying is, the government is going to have a more difficult time now to finance its debts than it used to be when we last rated it. We're not talking about your fiscal situation. We're not talking about your economy's growth. We're not talking about whether the deficit is going down or not. We're talking about whether the government has an easier time now of raising money than it did then. Okay, that's the question. Is it true? Now, let me ask you a question. If you have a more difficult time borrowing now than you did before, are you as credit worthy as you were before? That's the question. If you have a more difficult time borrowing, it doesn't say you can't borrow, but it says you have a more difficult time borrowing. Maybe the terms are more difficult. Maybe you have to go to a different set of people. Maybe you have to do a different set of things. Is that not an example that your borrowing worthiness is more difficult? That's the question that the government has to battle in terms of the way Moody's sees itself. Okay, so let's look at some things. The government hired... what's the group now? The big financial people off of Wall Street. Oh, we have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Hi, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, yes, I'm listening to you.
Sir. Yes, Mr. Lang. I don't know why Miss... Yes.
Yes, I'm listening to you, sir. Yes, hi, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. I don't know why misunderstood you. I think more people die per year in car accidents than plane crash. Oh, I don't know if I missed, and you said more people die in plane crashes?
No, if I said that, that wasn't what I intended. I said more people die in car crashes than plane crashes.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because what it makes it so catastrophic is that more people die at one time in plane crashes than car crashes. But when you spread it out per year, more people die in car accidents than plane crash.
But yeah, I hear you when you say that, but the probability of dying in a plane crash is much lower than in a car crash.
Than a car crash, yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Yeah. So you're right, If you look at the incident as a single incident, yes. But
yes.
But
every time a plane crash, you know, you find those express, they go, and then they make that airline or the... air flying more safer.
Yeah.
Okay, because you could just Google it and find out, and you will see some good stats there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you. Yeah, so the government hired Rothschild, right, to look at its fiscal situation and advise it. Well, Rothschild said, don't go to the market. You're not in crisis. This is what Rothschild says. The government of Obama is not in crisis, but don't go to the international market. Go to the local market and get your money, right? Well, why not go to the international market? Is it because it might be tougher or what? More costly? It could be any number of things, right? So is that okay? We know that at some point, the prime minister himself, Minister of Finance, was saying to the local market, you know, that they seem to be reluctant to take up government debt. And he was kind of what's going on? Me and Motley face the same thing in Barbados. So there are some indications that your borrowing situation is tighter, and it's Moody's judgment, not mine, that in that situation, you're not as credit worthy. Now, let me be the second to say, I do believe that Moody's was a little harsh. I really do. Given occasions when they have held back on downgrades, I do believe that Moody's, like I thought they pulled the trigger a lot. I'm not saying they were wrong to pull the trigger, but they pulled the trigger a couple notches, maybe worse than it could have been. I thought they could have held off. You know, they could have held off and watched and see, you know, but, you know, they downgraded the U.S. when Barack Obama was president. You know, I don't know if it was them or Standard & Poor's, but, you know, they make their minds up and do what they want to do when they want to do it. And there's really not much you can do about it. But I thought, well, you know, I can't be harsh toward them in doing so, but I thought, you know, they could have held off. They can cost us some more money, for sure. Give us a perception, but you know what? It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity, because here's the thing, right? The government of the Bahamas, I have to say this carefully. The government of the Bahamas, see, credit worthiness is about borrowing, ability to borrow. And you always want to have credit worthiness and space to borrow, because emergencies could happen and you have to respond to those emergencies. That's what we call having fiscal space. But the government doesn't have to borrow at the clip it borrows. And the government may not, on some occasions, have to borrow if it decides that, you know what, we're going to have a period of austerity to kind of rebalance ourselves now. There's consequences to that for you and me. But when the Standard & Poor's says, we're going to downgrade you, when Moody says, we're going to downgrade you, they're saying, we're going to tell the lending community that you are a greater risk, and that's going to make them want to charge you more to borrow. But you don't have to borrow, and you don't have to borrow at the clip. The question is whether or not we are prepared for the government not to borrow at the clip it borrowed, and in so doing, take a period of time to rebalance its financial circumstances to create the space that makes us safer, and therefore our credit worthiness will be improved. Can we tolerate that? Because if the government doesn't have its $500 million deficit, it is going to be, in effect, extracting 5% or so of economic activity from your economy. Can you take that? Do you want that? Is that worth doing so that later on your debt to GDP ratio is in the vicinity of 55, 60% as opposed to 80, 90, 100%, so that if something happens, the market is saying, yeah, but the Bahamas is a good land. I can help them out. And it's not as costly to do so. Are you willing to make that sacrifice? That's the question. A downgrade isn't a death sentence. It's an invitation. It's an invitation to do better. It's like your credit score goes down, And it's an invitation. It's not a death sentence, but it's an invitation to take stock, do what you have to do to rectify the situation so that you can prove your circumstance, improve your circumstances for the future. But that the call is on you, whether you are prepared to sacrifice some comfort and ease for today for greater comfort and ease tomorrow, later. That's the question. And ain't too many people willing to make that choice, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody,
come take my...
You marched the car?
I marched the car. The lady who ran into me marched the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Isn't it time you conquered your investment goals? With RF Mutual Funds, you can access a range of investments within a single fund. That means you get access to top-performing local stocks, along with exposure to international markets. Add expert management and competitive returns by 25.16% with our targeted equity fund, and you won't just meet your investment goals, you'll conquer them. Get started with RF Mutual Funds today at rfgroup.com.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
And gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. We've been talking about Moody's downgrade of the Bahamas' sovereign rating, particularly your unsecured long-term debt. Essentially saying, you know, you're not as creditworthy as you used to be. Again, I hear them. It matters, but it's not a situation of panic for me. And also, the government shouldn't ignore it as to say they have it wrong. I think the government should look at it as an invitation. But we have a continuing invitation in respect of our financial and fiscal circumstances. Because here's what I believe to be true. This is what I believe to be true. We are not going forward going to face less risky circumstances. We're not. Frankly, I believe we're going to face more risky circumstances. What do I mean by that? We are faced going forward with combinations of these. Natural disasters, in particular in the way of hurricanes, we could even be staring at earthquakes and tsunamis. We have those possibilities. We certainly have climatic conditions that are not favorable to stability in too many instances, it seemed to me. Secondly, we have global threats of war that can disrupt the global economy. We know that to be so. We have global threats of pathogens like COVID still out there, still possible to survive, and the next one could be abundantly more deadly than COVID. We have ideological issues that are destabilizing powerful countries politically that could result in civil wars, that could be disruptive to the global economic and social order. And we have the constant threat of terrorism. And we have the fragility of global financial systems that could be impacted by local incidences in strategic places across the globe. So we have all of these risks that are out there that we are able to face in much greater certainty than we have had and known in the past. So against that backdrop, you want to get yourself ready for for these possibilities. And that readiness is a question of, well, if the financial system still holds, being able to borrow so that you can have the cash on hand to do some things that you have to do. Secondly, it means securing your environs so that you have shelter and food to be able to withstand winters of disruption. And it means ensuring that you have such integrity in your social systems, inclusive of the relationships that exist between your citizens, that in the event of disasters and catastrophe, they are coming to each other's aid. Boy, listen to me. We have not a clue sometimes how fragile the social order can be when we start treating each other like other and not brother or sister. Because in times of great need and disaster, where you survive is in looking out for each other. I was at home the other day thinking how fragile the order we live in is. My neighbors and others, we have an unspoken agreement that we're neighbors and we cooperate with each other and we look out for each other, and that's what we do. I mean, my neighbor across the road calls me over. She says, "Mr. Chivago, my phone is something's wrong with my phone. I can't get it on." I go over there, I look at the phone, I work it for her and help her out. So that's my neighbor, right? She feels free to do that. My son might go over there and hang out. He can do that. My other neighbor says, "Bro, I know you were away, so I was watching the place." One neighbor, if I'm away, can will go water the plants for me, so forth and so on. But that's the order we have. But nothing stops them from one day decide, "Man, the hell with all of this. I ain't cooperating with nobody. In fact, why you have what you have anyhow? You have what I have and I have what you have," and so forth. That can happen, right? Things can precipitate social breakdown that way. So that is why we have to do the things that strengthen those bonds, so that in the event of tragedy and challenge, people pull together and not pull apart. We've seen this in hurricanes. We had hurricanes. My neighbor, he fishes. And in the hurricane, obviously the power went off. And so his decision is, okay, let's cook up what we could cook up and share it. Right? I had a generator. So I tell him, "Listen, send over the drop cord and wake up, wake." But that is an order that has to be maintained by intentionality if it is to endure when real challenge comes. And this is why we have to, the government of the Bahamas ain't never going to tell you we are going to shrink our expenditure in the economy. Don't want to tell you that. But is that good for us in the long run? We have to cut back X, Y, and Z. Don't want to tell you that. But is that good for us in the long run? Is perpetual increases in our expenditure doable? Is perpetual deficit spending doable? Could be. At the clip, we go. Mm-mm. Stack says, Mr. Lang, not being facetious here, but how are we being downgraded when a leader of a particular party and a member of the PLP party told us we are billions in natural resources? Because having banana trees in your yard and not growing any bananas can't do anything for you if banana's selling. That's how come. Natural resources being in your earth. Listen, first of all, the gold that's in the earth is still gold, but does nothing for you if not mined. So having billions of dollars in natural resources is only a potentiality. It takes execution to move potentiality to kinetic reality. And until that happens, all you talk about is your potential, your natural resources, which are not your exploited value, all right? And so we'd have to be able to do something about it, right? And so the people who believe that firmly, you know, maybe there is in them the ability, the genius to get it done. And I'm not even being facetious when I say that. But just having fish in your water doesn't mean anything if the fish haven't been harvested to be put into the marketplace for the benefit of the people seeking fish and done so at a sustainable level. There's no benefit to that. That's no different. It's no different. Listen to me. That's no different than you have talented young men and women hanging around the Bahamas deciding they're not going to do anything about developing their potential, educating themselves, developing new skills, new valuable skills, and therefore living in poverty for the rest of their lives. They have natural resource in their labor and intelligence, natural. But until realized, all they are is potential. And that's why Dr. Myers Munroe, the late, used to say some of the richest places on planet Earth are graveyards. Graveyards where people died with all their potential still inside of them, with all the seed of achievement inside of them, because they did nothing about it. So it's not the existence of natural resources that makes you wealthy. It is the proper usage of that resources that makes you wealthy. And sometimes, and I say proper use because they are places in the world that have oil, that have gold, that have diamonds, that have all these precious things, and their economies and peoples are in shambles. Why? Because they were improperly utilized. In fact, they were exploited. And at the end of the day, they end up as bad off as they would have been without those resources having even been touched. So I am mindful, aware, conscious of Moody's and Standard & Poor's position on us, but more mindful, more aware of the opportunity we have to improve our situation, but we will not be able to do that without some sacrifice, without some pain, without some discomfort, without some dis-ease. Without some adjustments. And unless we get there, and unless we want that, it'll be what it'll be. And it'll be what it will be for a very long time. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. So tomorrow, hopefully, God spares life, we'll be back. Y'all have a fantastic evening.
Take a stand, everybody.